Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira. Perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli, gol! Alessio Romagnoli!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrude.
What's up guys? Glad to be back. Find me on Twitter at Torgrude45. A tree fell in Madison's neighborhood and he doesn't have electricity or something. I don't know, it's weird. But yeah, he's dead to us again, but maybe he'll be back next week.
Yeah, probably. He seems to do like 1 week on, 1 week off, doesn't he, at the moment? So,
ironically, I won't be here next week.
So, no, because it's your birthday, so everybody wish you a happy birthday in advance. Yeah, but yeah, hopefully no trees fall on you.
Hopefully one does.
It's just Detroit, man. Weird stuff seems to happen in Detroit, you know?
Weird things, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, mad. Yeah, speaking of madness, Monday night, played Lecce away. We won. Not only did we win, we scored 4 goals.
Yeah.
It feels weird as hell to be saying that, but yeah.
Not something I anticipated saying at all. And to say we win 4 goals, I mean, when was the last time we scored 4 goals? I don't even remember. It's been since like 2016 against Sassuolo. Does that sound right?
Yeah, it certainly hasn't happened in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah. It was strange because there was no crowd, no noise. So even though we're up 4-1, I wasn't as hyped as I should have been, you know? I still felt like it was a preseason or a practice game. So it's a unique phenomenon, but oh well.
I mean, yeah, we shouldn't complain.
3 points are 3 points, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And we've become so accustomed to not winning that to win and to win in this fashion seemed to kind of, I won't say totally reignite the fan base. Don't get me wrong. There was still a lot of realism, but it did seem to get a lot of people saying, all right, football's been away for a while. The Juve game, we didn't score. We got knocked out. I haven't missed it. But then we put in a performance like that where for once we put away the major, major chances that we got. And yeah, people were more positive about it.
Yeah, and to be honest, the majority of the squad looked like they did really well. I mean, obviously the scoreline would suggest that also, but there were only a few players that I thought were underperforming, but the majority of them were overperforming. I mean, you look at Hakan, someone we've slagged off for the last, I don't know, 3 months.
3 years.
End of the match. Yeah, 3 years, really. I mean, I didn't the first year. I bought his shirt, but definitely last year and this year. But yeah, he had man of match involved in all 4 goals, I think 2 assists. I mean, he did fantastic, so good for him.
I think what we should probably do is start with the positives. Let's start with the goals. So going through it, the first goal, we'd been on top for a long time in the game up until the first goal. We missed a couple of opportunities. Bonaventura had that close range shot from the bobble corner saved. And then Calhanoglu got his first assist when he drilled in a low cross and Bonaventura flicked it onto Castillejo's boot from about that far away and it just diverted perfectly into the far corner. Could say that it's good fortune, but I think we'd made our fortune up until that point by playing well. It was. You could already see up until the first goal and when the first goal went in, how those 3 players behind Rebic were all just switching places. Like Calhanoglu started on the left and he ended up on the right for that assist. You know, so there was a lot of nice fluidity. Then there was the penalty incident. We'll come on to that. And then we scored pretty much straight after as Bonaventura tapping from Calhanoglu's shot. So he had a hand in that goal, but it's not an assist. And then Calhanoglu's through ball for Rebic not long after that to make it 3-1. Really well taken goal. You know,
yeah,
Rebic,
I mean, he
had
ran
to run it 60 yards.
Yeah. And then did you notice Romagnoli was the first one to celebrate with him? Like Romagnoli hauled ass the entire pitch and was the first one to like embrace, you know, besides Lecce ball boy.
I was going to say, let's talk about that now. What an amazing story that is. For those who haven't read it yet, and I would urge you to go on our website and check the interview that the local paper in Lecce have done with him. But basically, the story is that he's a 19-year-old player from the youth academy. He's been with the youth academy either for the last 5 years or since he was 5. I couldn't quite translate that right. But either way, been with Lecce for a while. Boyhood fan of the club from the area. And the goal went in and he sort of turned away because he didn't want to see it because obviously it's his team and he didn't want to see them getting battered. And Rebic saw that and went over and apparently initially gave him like a playful punch and then he started smiling and then he gave him a fist bump and then he gave him a hug afterwards. And there's a great photo of it. And I just think it was a really cool moment, you know.
Yeah, I mean, as a like, obviously he's a player, but let's be real. That even though you're a part of the youth team, you're not like, you're not recognized as like a professional player, you know. So his, I guess, it's basically like a fan interaction with the player, and regardless of if it's your team, the team against you, when you see a player and you get to interact with them up close, it's exciting, you know. No matter who you are, who you root for, it's cool. So to have something like that happen to you, especially when you're on the pitch and have a goal scorer, someone who's in as great a form as Rebic, come up and you know, tease you a little bit, give you a hug, like that's cool. It's really cool. So
it was cool. Yeah, it was a nice moment. I mean, we got some good content out of that, and yeah, it was fantastic to see the ball boy have a smile on his face. Obviously, it was his team getting dicked, so it's kind of difficult to find a smile, but he did. And in addition, while we're on the subject of Rebic, you know, he seems to be like the person that every single fan is getting behind, because we record on Wednesdays, obviously. Today was a day off. The players were in on Tuesday, so the day after the Lecce game, to do some sort of recovery work, you know, muscle fatigue stuff. But they had today off, and Rebic still showed up to train, even though he had a day off. So that just shows he is, you know, forget the Juve thing. He's dead
he's
set
serious.
On yeah. And God, I would love to insert a clip here of what we said before Christmas about him, you know, about how he's probably going to be heading back, because it is just...
It's cool because he's taking kind of the same trajectory as Bakayoko. You remember, he started off poorly and he got a lot of hate for it, and he used that and turned it into motivation, and it seems Rebic has done the exact same thing. And like I said, showing up early, one of four players, the other three were all are all injured, so I think they might have been required to show up anyways. Between, you know, Duarte, Musacchio, and Ibra. But yeah, I mean, he's doing everything right, and he's making the most of it, and now he's a fan favorite. It doesn't make any sense to get rid of him.
I think, like you said, with the Rebic thing and the Bakayoko thing, it's what separates the men from the boys in football. Mm-hmm. You know, the players who are very, very mentally resilient and will go to any length possible to prove themselves. And if they do something that's not up to their usual high standards, for example, Rebic's red card at Juventus, rather than wallow in self-pity and rather than just accept, you know, scoring a goal to make it 3-1 against a team that's destined for relegation, he just wants to go that extra mile and prove to everybody his levels of professionalism. I have been so blown away with Rebic since the Christmas break. I mean, he's got 8 goals in all competitions, 7 in his last 7 Serie A starts.
It's incredible.
You know, it's not getting talked about enough, the goal that he scored against Lecce, because like I say, he picked up the ball and he ran with it for 60 yards and he produced that composed finish. The goal that it reminded me of, remember Menez against Palermo when he ran it through on goal and dinked it over the keeper into sort of the,
Which, honestly, speaking of Menez, to get completely off topic for a minute, A, he just signed with Reggina. But, you know, obviously everyone knows that the back heel goal where he rounds the keeper against, I believe it was Parma. Did you see Piontek in a very similar situation and then his teammates stole the goal from him this week?
No, I didn't see that actually.
Yeah, so Piontek's running down he's running down the left side of the box, beats two defenders, goes around the keeper. He's got the ball like right on goal line and he's like gearing up to take the kick. He's maybe a yard out and his fucking teammate just slides in and steals this goal. And Piontek's just like, what the fuck?
You'd be gutted, wouldn't you? Because even though I mean, that Menez goal against Parma, don't get me wrong, love watching it back. Great goal, mental game. We won that 5-4.
Oh, yeah.
It just provokes so many memories of that particular era under Inzaghi and how well we started that season. But there is no denying it was an extravagant back heel on basically on the goal line.
Oh, yeah, it was point blank.
I just find it funny that Piontek, who's known for being a poacher like that, tried to kind of do the same thing and got it robbed. But that is quite a funny one. Speaking of goals on the goal line, nice little segue. Fourth goal against Lecce.
Yeah.
Rafael Leão scores for the first time since January.
Yeah, with the header. I liked it.
I'll give credit to two players that I've criticised for weeks and weeks on here. Conte kind of miscontrolled it, but then put in an inch-perfect cross.
Yeah.
You know, give him credit for that. That's the positions that when he gets the ball in space there, he's going to cause damage. We'll come on to the rest of his performance in a bit. But and then Leão, good positioning, got in front of his man. Bullet header, he couldn't really miss from there. But it was nice. And then he did the whole...
Yeah, media. Blew a kiss to the media.
Yeah, for those who can't see, he just sort of like did the mouthing emoji and then you know, blew a kiss to the camera as if to say, stop talking, haters, or whatever.
Do you think the cross from Conte was dumb luck more than anything?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Well, you know the expression, a broken clock's right twice a day. Yeah. He literally failed to beat the first man before that summit, and then eventually got one right.
Like, I think in his head, that's not at all where he meant to place the ball. That's just where it went.
But if you look at it, it kind of comes off the instep of his ankle. Mm-hmm. Not really that. So it took a bit of weight off it, but it was one of them where when you watch it in real time, it's really satisfying because the ball pinged out to him, touch, cross, bang. It all happened in about 3 seconds. That was nice. And Calhanoglu had a hand in that as well. He spread it over for Conte. Yeah. So. Calhanoglu, weirdly, I thought he was involved in 4 goals. So he's gonna get, based on who scored algorithm and stuff, like an 8.5. But I think his overall player probably warranted a 6. I don't think he was that, you know, he was kind of wasteful
better than
with
a 6, but yeah, he was wasteful. I think he was less wasteful than normal, evident by the goals and or the contribution, but yeah, I mean, that's been his problem for a while, is his performance. You know, he's just wasteful. He's not the best. But I think we got out of him in this game exactly what Rangnick is going to want to see. And I think this performance alone is the type of performance that Rangnick's going to look at and be like, okay, that's a guy I'm going to keep in the squad. I can make him do that every week. Like, a manager doesn't come into a squad and think, like, that was a good performance. I don't know if I could get that out of him day in, you know. I think Rangnick's going to see that and be like, okay, this is Ralph
something to
one.
Work with. Yeah.
Yeah. And so interestingly, I think he saved his job essentially with that performance. Not that it was at risk, but I think it's solidified now.
Yeah. I think Rangnick will have been watching the performance in general and will have been encouraged, you know, mm-hmm. Pioli sort of had us geared up against a team that just to get it out there, are shockingly bad. Yeah. You know, they've got the worst defensive record in the league by a long, long way. They looked disorganized. Do you know what? Up until probably halftime, they weren't terrible, and obviously they equalised again. We'll come on to the penalty, but yeah, a terrible team. Don't get me wrong, but Rangnick purely set us up in a way of playing that I think Rangnick will look at and draw similarities from. You know, the way that we attacked in waves with that front four, and
do you think
we
that's
created
intentional? You know, from Pioli, like, it's weird to see like that he's working with them towards the future goal, but maybe he just, you know, he likes his players, and so he's thinking, this is how Rangnick's going to operate. Let's see if I could try and make that transition earlier, make it as smooth as possible. I don't see a coach doing that, but maybe.
No, I think his hand's been forced to play that way because of Ibrahimovic being injured. Mm. We aren't playing that way with Zlatan back in the team, unfortunately. And I say unfortunately because it was really entertaining to watch. And anybody who tells me that we don't play well without a target man, I would agree based on the evidence of this season. But when we get a coach who likes playing on the counter, who likes this 10-second rule of getting the ball, moving it vertically and shooting, I think we're going to be a much more entertaining team to watch with a fluid front two rather than a target man. We needed Zlatan to come in because we were so toothless up front.
Right. Especially the first half.
Without Rebic. Basically, we played the first half of the season without Rebic. That's the best way of looking at it. And Liao couldn't do it on his own. Piontek was misfiring. He didn't have the strength of character to pull us through that. So we needed Zlatan to come in and just slap a bandage over the bleeding, really. But now we're in a position where, you know, the rest of the season's useful for us to see the kind of players that will be a good fit for the 4-2-2-2 and let you exactly the kind of game where you see how we're going to operate with such fluidity. The players in the front four are moving around. It was nice to see. You know, Roma's the big test. Again, we'll discuss that in a bit, but it's a tick. First Serie A game back, and it gets a tick, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a game that we should have won, and we did win it.
And those are the games that we historically struggle with, so it's nice to see that we actually did what we were expecting to do.
Well, comes full circle, because Pioli's first game in charge was Lecce at home, and Calderoni scored that late screamer to mean that we drew 2-2, and we created enough chances to win 4 games that day. We were being wasteful. But yeah, here we are now. It could have been different, I suppose, just after half time. So what happened was Kjaer went down in a heap under a challenge from Kuma Boubacar. I think it was Boubacar, could be wrong.
I believe
on that. It was a knee trauma is basically what they're describing it as. I think he just sort of got caught off balance as he planted it down. And then carried on for 11 minutes and then got subbed off. Gabbia came on. It was all right. And then just after halftime, Boubacar went down under a challenge from Gabbia, and the ref pointed, the ref, of course, being Paolo Valeri, pointed to the penalty spot, and there was no consultation with VAR, and it was given, and Mancos, who scored, sent Donnarumma the wrong way to make it 1-0. Now, I don't know if you saw the slow-mo.
It's not a pen.
It's not a pen. He falls into him.
Yeah.
And
it's
the fact
all
that,
on him.
The fact that he didn't even look at it. He didn't even take a look at it. It just like, how many more times is this gonna? I mean, did you see the penalty shout against Inter tonight? The one that was basically the exact same.
Identical as Calabria's.
Calabria, yeah.
Yeah.
And
I wish I could say I was surprised.
And,
I mean, this is
and
just how it's been.
Would have won that game 4-3 if that had been given. You know, that's the easy way of looking at it. And it just doesn't feel like we're getting the rub of the green. I mean, we shouldn't be moaning after a 4-1 win. That's what people will say. But this is exactly the time to moan, to prove that, forget the result, we noticed that. Like, we saw it. It was a terrible decision. Boubacar just fell over, and Gabriel let him fall down. And the rest
and the thing was, that was also an equalizer, too. I mean, that goes to show how against us it is. I mean, we're lucky that we didn't get in our heads about it like we typically do, and we countered it immediately, got back on the score sheet. Typically, that stuff happens, and then the team's like, okay, we're up against 12 men, as per usual, and they just stop playing, you know? And we finally didn't do that, but still, you're right. There's no reason that we shouldn't be complaining about stuff like this. It happens week in and week out. It's at the point – I mean, everyone makes their conspiracy theories, but it's at the point where it's really hard to even call it a conspiracy anymore, you know? It's
just a mountain, and it's getting bigger, of evidence to suggest that VAR has not been great to us.
No.
You know, we'll see. I think there'll be one incident that tips it over the edge between now and the end of the season, and everyone just completely loses their mind about it. But, yeah, just not a good look, especially it being such a contentious decision at such a key moment of the game. And he didn't even look. He just didn't even go and have a look at the monitor. That's what bugs me a little bit, you know. Anyway, whatever. We won 4-1. It didn't matter. Could have scored more if I'm going to be critical. We're still lacking that proper killer instinct, you know, to really put 6 or 7 past a team like that, which, you know, all teams would have done. But apart from that, pretty good. I mean, even Conte had an average game. We did a tactical analysis piece, which is worth looking at. It'll be under the match section on the website. And there was an interesting point. It was the last point, I think, that was how they just constantly managed to drag Conte out of position by playing little 1-2 triangles down his side. It's just, his defensive work is just not happening, I'm afraid. We know now, though, that's the thing. You know, if he could have been amazing, if he could have looked like Cafu in that game against Lecce, it's something to build on. And then if he'd have had a good performance at both ends against Roma, again, people's heads start turning and they think, oh, okay, maybe there's something here. But yeah, you know, an assist doesn't mask what was another bang average performance, unfortunately. Calabria, you know, he must be thinking, what have I got to do at this point? Especially given he's the one that we apparently want to sell. Put him in the shop window, you know, try and get a bit more value out of him.
It's interesting. I think they're banking on the fact that whatever they sell Calabria for, pure revenue. So give Conte the minutes, give him a chance to grow and evolve. But I mean, is it worth it? Like, is that the club saying we're not in any sort of European race, even though we are, with seventh now being confirmed to Europa League spot? I mean, we need that. We can't go into the season without it.
So no,
we need
can't.
To finish like that. But I mean, I don't know. Do you think we're going to get Europe?
Well, I'll throw a question out there now. Comes from Rohit Rajiv, and he was the guy who did the tactical analysis piece. I'd say he's just started writing for us. He's been writing for us for 3 weeks now, I would say, 4 weeks, something like that. Does really, really good player analysis pieces, really good features. He's done a three-parter on why we've turned to Ralph Raniak, which is great. Financial analysis, fantastic, fantastic stuff. Just go and have a look at that. It's under the features section. He asked us a question for the podcast and said, is making Europe a good or bad thing for Milan, considering the squad depth that we'd need to get in the summer to actually be able to compete across three?
I think it's still a good thing. I think that even if we don't make it far we need to be in the competition. We need to have some sort of allure, you know, even if we don't believe we're going to win, just to say to prospective players, look, we know it's not Champions League. We're in the Europa League. We're growing. We're moving up. You know, we have some sort of competition to look forward to instead of saying, yeah, we didn't qualify for anything. We've been pretty shitty, but, you know, come help us. Like, it's not as good of a sell. So I think it's important to have it. It does give us some revenue, even if it isn't anything massive. It does help out. It gives us that extra bonus. And I don't know, it gives us another route to the Champions League if we were to miraculously pull it off. Why not?
I agree. I couldn't agree more. I understand those people who say the Europa League's an inconvenience, but it only becomes an inconvenience if it starts to conflict with other objectives.
Right.
If you have a bad start to the season and we have a load of injuries, you could say, oh, the Europa League groups are doing us no good here. I get that. But then when you get to the knockout rounds of the Europa League after Christmas, it's not a hindrance at all. You know,
it's two games.
Yeah, you can easily get away with playing two games a week, 2 weeks out of the month, if that makes sense. You know, that's all it is.
Well, and even then, those group stage games.
I mean, when we got to the knockout against Arsenal, you know.
Right, everyone was excited. They were looking forward to it. Those group stage games, I mean, no offense to any other leagues, but they're not against top quality leagues. Rarely do they put up a big fight. I mean, we played mostly reserves in the last time we were in it, and we topped our group no problem.
Just played like our second 11 and Andre Silva up front. And that was enough to come.
And he got like 5 goals.
Not, sorry,
you know?
that was the Arsenal season. But yeah, the last season was bad. You know,
we didn't get out of our group last season.
Olympiacos weren't bad, and they had been a Champions League team consistently up until that point. And Real Betis, I was well impressed with. But then,
honestly forgot all about it.
Yeah,
I was thinking we went through. That was the wrong season prior. But
it wasn't a great campaign, but the Arsenal one was definitely enjoyable up until the Arsenal game, where I think if we had it back, we'd do a lot better. But
I still firmly believe we were the better team in that fixture as well.
Away game, we were all over him until that dodgy penalty that was given on Danny Welbeck.
Surprise.
That was right in front of us, and it was terrible. It was worse than the one on Boubacar. But yeah, we need Europa League for, I'd say, 3 reasons. Number one being financial. You know, you get 30 mil bonus at least for just reaching the group stages. We could do with that money. And then you get more the further you get in the competition. The two being the prestige and the allure. Like you say, being able to attract players who perhaps already play at Europa League clubs, like Szoboszlai. They were a Champions League club this year, but obviously dropped into because of the Champions League. All of these targets that we've got who want to play in European competition in some capacity, like Rashica maybe, who's at Bremen. Just so many of these targets that would like the opportunity to show what they can do on a European stage. And the prestige part being the fact that we haven't won the Europa League yet / UEFA Cup. It's the one that's missing from our trophy cabinet. So I think we should go for it, because then we've got the full set. And then the third part is that we eventually have to, the next time we qualify for European competition, be it Europa League or Champions League, we have to go to UEFA and agree a new settlement, basically, regarding our financial fair play. And the reason that it's better to do it this summer is because financial fair play restrictions have been slackened across the board because of COVID. So if we go to them and say, oh, by the way, we're in Europe next year, about this settlement agreement, it's much more likely to be in our favour. And also there was a thing that came out from PBP, Pietro Prota from Radio Rossoniere, that said that as part of the settlement agreement initially, the one that we signed last year, which included us getting excluded from the Europa League, in exchange for that exclusion, we had a year of no restrictions, basically. We could spend what we want. And that was meant to be this summer. But the rumour is that when we go back to negotiate this settlement, we're going to ask for it postponing, so we get basically 2 free summers where we can do whatever we want, because all the other clubs are getting one anyway, so we should get that plus the one that we got booted out of the Europa League for.
Makes sense to me.
So yeah, it just makes sense to do it this year so we can get that as well. And yeah, it just helps Ranić as well, and it gives him another sphere, another environment for him to blood his players in, you know?
And unless he does absolutely god off that first season, it essentially gives him 2 seasons, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's
it's weird, because the summer of 2017 when we brought in all those players, the Chinese ownership, and we were in the Europa League, obviously. It was the Europa League where we were putting teams to the sword, and that was the only sort of area where we looked competent.
Right.
Especially Andreas Silva, who was banging them in. And it was like an escape from our league form at that point. Mm-hmm. And I wonder with Ranić, when we had Ahmed on, he said it well, that we're probably going to need a year for him to get adjusted to the tactics of Italian football. You know, not only is he the head of recruitment, but he's our head coach. You got to remember that he's going to be learning a new league here. And it might be just a nice distraction for him to go back to a competition that he knows well and to play against teams that he knows better. And give the team a bit of confidence, you know.
Yeah.
But that's,
and we might perform better than in the league, like you said. It might be beneficial all around. I don't see any downsides.
But back to league action this weekend, this Sunday, it's 5:15 Central European Time, I believe. We've got Roma at home at San Siro. Roma have just won as we're recording. I was checking the score. Roma have won 2-1 against Sampdoria. Late winner from them. They're in fifth now, obviously. They're looking a bit out of reach of us now, 9 points ahead. Basically looks like a shootout for seventh spot for us.
Yeah.
Because Napoli are 3 points ahead. Mm-hmm. And we've still got to play them away from home. So I suppose if we beat them, we could get the head-to-head advantage.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting game. I mean, we'll start with the starting lineup that you would play. No Ibra, by the sounds of it. He's not going to be back in time. Chiaia is also probably going to not be risked. Probably not going to be risked even. So it gives us selection problems straight off the bat. I'm guessing we're going to pick similar teams here, to be honest.
I think it's going to be almost identical to the last game, just with Gabia, obviously, and that's really the only change I would expect.
Yeah, I agree. People might say that Liao has earned his shot.
I don't agree with that.
If anything, I think if he did, it would be in a 4-4-2. And he'd be stuck up front with Rebic instead of maybe Bonaventura. Castillejo, I have to give him his props as well. He grew into the game at Lecce and he had a great performance. He keeps his spot. Obviously, Calhanoglu keeps his spot because he's literally immovable at this point. I think the back four, as you said, pretty solid. Just got to get Gavir in there for Chiaia if he's not going to be risked. The midfield too, we don't have any other choices, so in a way consistency is good because it allows the same but virtually the same 11 to build on the last performance.
And it was a great performance, and additionally, you know, we have five subs. Anyone who needs to come on, there's a good chance they will. Granted, Pioli made the weird decision to bring on Bilia in like the 89th minute or whatever. That was strange, but whatever.
So let's mention that actually now.
Yeah, okay.
I was going to say about the Lecce game and talk about the subs that he brought on. So
they weren't good.
Yeah, the first one he had to make, Gabia on for Chiaia. Liao on for Rebic with 23 minutes left. Totally understand. Mm-hmm. Keep Rebic's energy for Sunday. The last three, he brought on Salamakers. I don't think he's going to stay beyond his loan.
Me either.
To be honest. Bilia for Bonaventura. Bilia, that's a player who's leaving at the end of August for a player who's leaving at the end of August. And he brought on Paqueta for Kessier, but he gave Paqueta 4 minutes at the end of the game.
And it's almost offensive. You know,
it is genuinely like he's trying to make a point here.
Yeah. Paqueta coming on makes sense, but do it earlier. Granted, this wasn't a game that we like were looking for any explosiveness, any flair, anything. Like the game was settled. Everyone agrees there was no coming back for Lecce. There was no need to push for anything else. But it's like, that's when you give the opportunities to the young guys, you know, the Colombos, the Daniel Maldinis, the Brescianinis, whoever we had on our bench, give them the chance. Don't give it to, like you said, a guy who's leaving in August who has been nothing for us. He's, you know, if he was like a club legend, then sure, give him some minutes. But like, really, he was a bad investment.
If you can't give these Primavera players that may or may not play a big role next season under Ranić, who likes his youth players, if you can't give him game time 4-1 up against a relegation battling side, when are you going to play them?
Exactly. Where,
what's we brought on Daniel Maldini for the last kick of the game when we needed to find a winner from a corner against Hellas Verona at home. Like, what
that made
the,
no
what,
sense. That really, was upsetting. That ruined his debut.
Yeah, that was shocking. So for me, I mean, I wouldn't have brought on Salamakers, Belia. What I would have done is brought on Paqueta earlier, probably for Bonaventura. Mm-hmm. Kessié for Krunic, because we still need to figure out if there's a player in Radia Krunic. He's got 11 games, basically, to figure out if he's going to be sticking around or if we should sell him to Torino or whatever. And you've got to get Colombo and Daniel Maldini on somehow at 4-1 up. You just do. It's perfect time for them to get some minutes. And if one of them were to have scored, it would have been a huge story on top of an already good day.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm not a big proponent to throwing in youth players just because. But when the option is either Billy or a youth player, then it's a no-brainer. You know, if you make no changes, I would have been less upset. You know, if we'd have just left it. And I do think Jack should have came off significantly sooner than he did because he just doesn't have the legs he used to. This was a bad performance from him. It wasn't god-awful, but for what we're used to, it was pretty low. So I think he deserved to come off significantly sooner than he did. And like you said, there's so many better options. If Maldini could have got it, and the fact that we were 4-1 up, there's no pressure to perform at all. That's the ideal time for a youth player to come on and do something. You know,
it's almost like a pressure vacuum at that point. There's nothing. It's just go out and show us what you can do.
And someone had tweeted to me about it and said that the time to bring on a youth player is also when you're 4-1 down because there's nothing to lose. But I think that's a lot more pressure than the kid's scared, you know? Sure, they're like no one's going to hold them responsible, but I don't think that's as good of a spot. I think that's when you bring on the veteran and just hold down what you got, you know?
It is just one of those where you say, what's the perfect time to bring on an 18-year-old who you think's got big hopes for the future? 3-4-1 up. It's just that is the perfect situation. And I wonder if Paolo will have been a bit fuming about that, you know, because it's his son at the end of the day. There is a vested interest there.
Yeah.
And you've got a question like, when is he going to get the minutes if he's
right,
not?
Right. Well, because it's like the headline, if he comes on, does something, Daniel Maldini scores an incredible 5-1 thriller, comes on in a losing effort, it's like, Maldini air makes appearance in
there's still 3-1 a story feet. There, you
it's
know.
Like, yeah, there's still a story, but the headline muddles it, and there's no downside to bringing him on 4-1 up. I don't know. I know I keep going back.
No, I totally agree. I agree. Rano, we need to see better subs from Pioli, you know, we really do. I get it, not bringing on teenage players in a really, really, let's say we're 1-1 against Roma with 20 minutes left. That's probably not the time to throw kids on, you know. It's a bit too much pressure, but that was just perfect and it didn't happen, so a bit annoying. But anyway, back to the Roma game. That's our lineup, you know. We got a couple of injury problems to deal with. Just looking at Roma's 11 that they played tonight against Sampdoria, Mirante in goal, Bruno Perez right back, Smalling and Roger or Roga, whatever, centre-backs. Kolarov left-back. Veretu and Diawara, the holding mids. Carlos Perez, the guy they signed on loan from Barcelona, right wing. Pastore, attacking midfield. Mkhitaryan, left wing. And Dzeko up front. Now, the thing that scares me about that is if Gabbia starts, it's definitely his toughest test yet against Edin Dzeko. The hope is that Romagnoli can deal with him. However, he doesn't tend to do that well against forwards who bully him physically. We've seen it with Lukaku twice this season. And we've seen it as well with, what's it called, Duvan Zapata. Dzeko is just an expert Serie A marksman. He's a hell of a unit. He's a presence up front. I'd love to have him. You know, if Ibra left, I would love to be able to bring in someone like Dzeko for when we need a similar kind of presence. It's going to be tough, this.
It is. And, you know, I'm looking right now at FopMob, this app that I use, and they have Milan with a 63% chance of winning, which I find insane. That doesn't make any sense to me. You know, in the last, like, head-to-head games, however many, last, like, 20 games, we definitely have not won the bulk of that. So I find that really interesting. It's going to be tough. They're in significantly better form than us. like you said, Dzeko's going to be really strong against Romagnoli. It's a tough match for Gabbia to start. Hopefully Donnarumma shows up like he has been, because he killed it against Juventus. He always pulls up for the big – well, not always, but he's pulling up for the big games right now. If he continues to do that, we might be in good shape, when we might be able to catch him off the break like Rebic did in this last game. But I don't know. It's going to be a tough one, and I wouldn't bank on a win, but I also wouldn't doubt, or I wouldn't be surprised if it happened, you know?
Yeah, I think we're going to lose. Like,
okay.
I just have this bad feeling when we play Roma at home. You know, it doesn't feel like it's been great for us the last few seasons. I mean, in 2016, we lost 3-1 at home. 2017, we lost 4-1 at home to them. 2018, sorry, 2017 as well, we lost 2-0 at home to them. 2018, we won 2-1. And then obviously we lost to them earlier this season as well. It just feels like they're a bit of a bogey side for us at the moment, especially at San Siro. And it hurts not having Ibrahimovic. I think that the centre-back pairing is going to be a little bit exposed this time around. You know, Gabbia and Romagnoli haven't really played together and against a top opponent. And it'll be interesting to see how they... I mean, I would feel so much more confident with Chiesa in there. Just to put it bluntly, he's an absolute warrior. Not saying Gabi is incapable of a great performance, but I just worry that if he makes an early mistake, then it might be a bit harder for him to bounce back. And Roman are a good side. You know, I look at their 11. It's not a bad 11 at all. The big names aren't really there, but they certainly have a spine of players that's pretty good. And I mean, that 11 was missing the likes of Zaniolo and Pellegrini, who were both out injured at the moment. So that gives us a little bit of hope as well, I suppose. But I don't know. Like, I don't feel particularly good about this. I suppose they're 9 points ahead of us in the standings for a reason. This is a big one. Like, I'll be honest, this is a big, it's a big barometer of where we are in terms of what we've learned over the lockdown, where the current level of the squad is at. And more importantly, we're going into this murderer's row of games again, where we've got both Roman clubs, we've got Juve at home to play, we've got Napoli away. It's going to be season-defining, because if we come out of that with 2 points, what did we get last time? It was 2 points from that batch of games. Then we can kiss goodbye finishing seventh, you know, because Hayes, Verona and Parma seem to be sort of keeping up the pace, really.
Well, we're in ninth right now. Or no, we're in eighth. Mm. Yeah, we're in eighth. But, I mean, if we could just get out of negative goal differential, the fact that we're still negative -3 with 27 games played is ridiculous. And we were negative -6 just last week.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. All that comes from the 5-0 at Atalanta.
Yeah, it really ruined
it. Really, that was shocking. And we've got Atalanta to play at home still as well.
And there's no chance we win that. We're getting slaughtered again.
Yeah, I've got us down. Well, it's funny that we might as well have it now, because there was a tweet that was going around where people were predicting how many points we'd get between now and the end of the season, looking at the games that we've got on paper. Need to try and find the list here. But starting with Roma, I put for us to beat Lecce, I put for us to draw with Roma, beat Spal, lose to Lazio at home, draw with Juve at home, because I haven't been impressed with them really since they came back. Lose away at Napoli, because Gattuso. Beat Parma at home. Beat Bologna at home. We could drop points in one of those games, to be brutally honest. Draw with Sassuolo away, because you can just never tell how they're going to go. Lose to Atalanta, and then beat Sampdoria and Cagliari to end the season. So I had just 21 points from our remaining 12 games.
That's not good.
No, you've got to get 2 points a game, so probably a win short of being guaranteed seventh there. The key thing is to beat Parma, really.
If we could beat Parma and beat one of those teams above us, then we're in good shape. But that's a big if, a big if. I mean,
yeah,
it's crazy because in my head, obviously earlier today, Roma was losing for the good majority of that game until like the 70th minute, something like that. And I was thinking, wow, they're about to lose. If we could get 3 points over them, then it's game on, you know? But now that they won, and we probably aren't going to, it's like, that's out of reach. That's not happening. Mm. Fifth is eliminated.
I mean, even when Atalanta were 2-0 down, like, you know, they're still in the Champions League. There was just that niggling thing in the back of my mind that was like, well, this could be the start of their demise. You know, things might start going bad for them. And if Roma were to lose as well, then it's like all of a sudden, no. We strike at the right time. It
well, and now Juve's basically won the league.
Again. Yeah, it's tough. But I also, for all I wanted Lazio to win the league, I kind of shake my head and say, you've got to see games like that out when you're 2-0 up at Atalanta.
They looked just so bad the last 30. The last 30 minutes, they had nothing to give.
Strange. Very strange, because they've been exceptional all season. And they've done it with, again, an 11 and a squad that, for me, probably shouldn't be challenging for the title.
Do you think with the frequency of games coming up, Atalanta won't be able to hold their high pressure that they've been displaying all season? I mean, because they play a full 90, and they play it hard.
The thing is, they've probably got a squad of 20 players who will give you a 7 out of 10 every game.
Yeah.
And then they've got the match winners. So if the match winners can stay fit and stay firing, then they'll probably be all right. You know, the likes of Ilicic, Papu Gomez, even Gosens is getting stuck in with goals. And I don't know. It's Gasperini as well, isn't it? He seems to have this unknown quantity about him. But anyway, Roma prediction.
I'm going to go 2-1 Roma.
I'm going to stick with this. I mean, I've got a draw, so I'm going to say it'll be entertaining because the games have been entertaining so far. Cup aside, 2-2. I'll go with a 2-2 draw. Not asked about goal scorers, to be honest, in this one, but Rebic to bag again, whatever. Anyway, last major talking point, the Vito exclusive that we got through. Worth checking out if you haven't already. Just go to the news and then click exclusive, and it's been broken up into separate pieces on all the different topics, but the main one you'll see because it's got a big long headline. So Rangnick's basically had a meeting with the club recently in Austria. Gazidis was there, Gordon Singer was there from Elliott Management. 80 million euro budget. We did get a question actually from Darren Torres on Twitter, asked if 80 million is going to be enough. There's player sales to be included in that, but the targets, which we'll come on to, aren't cheap.
I mean, it. Yes and no. It depends what we get him. Upamecano is valued high, but he's got a year left on his contract, so it's possible we could get him significantly cheaper than he's worth. Slobber slide, however you say it. He continues to put in 10 out of 10 performances, so his value is increasing. I wish he would start sucking for a little bit. But other than that, I think everyone else is within range. I mean, 80 million is a solid chest, I think, for the players that we're looking for. Because, yes, they're performing well, but it's not like they're established world beaters for the past multiple seasons. We could get them pretty cheap if we do business correctly.
Hopefully on favorable deals, too. You know, exactly. The Jovic thing is like, if we have to pay 2 years loan and then we've got an option to buy, that is just no-brainer business.
Oh, yeah.
Because if he does well, he's going to want to stay and the buyout looks cheap. If he doesn't do well, then we send him back. It's that simple. Easy. You know, that's the way we have to go about business now. And it's important. I mean, the four targets that were mentioned, if you haven't read the report, Upamecano, as you said, contract situation could favour us. Obviously, he is one of Rangnick's pupils, basically. Szoboszlai, who is he got four goal contributions tonight, a goal and three assists for Salzburg, so he's flying. Apparently Arsenal are in for him as well, but we've got an agreement with the player. He's given the green light for the move, and we are going to launch an offer, so I think we need to nip that in the bud and get that in, because it's a position we need desperately as well.
It's got to be our first signing, or I guess our second technically, but it's got to be, out of all the main targets, that's got to be who we go for right away, because he's going to go quick. A big club wants him, I guarantee it, and it better be us.
Yeah, I totally agree. Milo Rashica.
I don't really know much about him.
I have seen him a fair bit, because I've been watching a fair bit of Bundesliga since it came back, but I also knew of him before. He is just like, he stands out because Werder Bremen is shit. Like, they're really bad. They're going down with a historically bad season. But he stands out because he's the only one who tries to make things happen. I think he's got 10 goals this season in a really bad team. And he scored an amazing goal where he rinsed Jerome Boateng at Bayern and pinged one into top corner from 20 yards. And his release clause goes down to 16 million when they inevitably get relegated. Again, Liverpool are after him, apparently. It's just, we need quality and goal threat out wide. Yeah. So let's say Depay's out of reach at 30 mil plus his salary. If Rangnick says this guy will do the job, get him. Just do it. You know, yeah. He knows the league. He does know the
league.
What
is his buyout cost currently if they don't get relegated? You know,
30 mil.
30. And where are they sitting in the table? They're low.
Yeah, they're really struggling. There's only one game left, so I think they might actually be relegated already. When the hell is the Bundesliga back?
Werder Bremen's in 17th, and they need.
I think they might be relegated.
8 points to get out. Yeah, they're done.
Yeah, they're finished.
So it's 16 mil. Okay. Yeah, so that's a no-brainer. Just give it to him right away. Just do it.
I would pay it. Again, I think it's a player in a position that we need. So, again, if Rangnick has endorsed it, then get it done. And who were the other two that Vito mentioned? There was Luka Jovic, obviously, spoken plenty about him, and Martin Odegaard. Now, yeah. Odegaard seems unlikely. There was only a little bit about him. He's on loan at Real Sociedad until 2021, as per the current agreement, and everyone's basically said that he doesn't want to go anywhere because he's doing really well at Sociedad as it stands. I think Real Madrid also have high hopes for him. Because
I don't see it happening. And to be honest, I'm not too interested in it. I mean, like you said, I know he's doing well at Sociedad, but I remember when he first got to Madrid, there were behavioral issues. And as we've seen with Balotelli, when you turn 30, if you have him, you still have him. So I don't know if we want that here.
Well, Jovic is like that as well, and I'm starting to get more and more worried the more you read about him. The hope would be that Rangnick can get him to buy into something.
Right.
You know, give him a fresh start and say, look, I've got you here because I trust you.
Well, the other thing is Jovic isn't getting the playing time he really should, you know, behind Benzema. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry, Karen.
That was it. I just don't think Jovic is getting the playing time he deserves.
Yeah, that could also be a thing. I don't think Zidane likes him, to be honest. That sounds like the narrative at the moment. The Odegaard thing is a difficult one as well because he just plays an attacking midfielder and there isn't a position for a number 10 in Rangnick's system. So he either plays out wide or he plays as a support striker. And I just don't know. I think that money, the money that it would take, you know, we're talking a 40 mil fee, apparently, could be better used in other areas. Get a holding mid, get Szoboszlai, get Rashica, and then we sort of...
But you got to think that we also get all the money coming from the Suso sale that's going to happen. Andre Silva, you know... he's got another year on the loan.
Silva and Rebic, we're looking at a straight swap at the moment, apparently equal in value, which is good for both, I think. You know, it needs to be mentioned as well at this point that Andre Silva's having a great season. He's got 15 goals in all competitions. He'd be our top scorer. And he seems to be comfortable, but it plays into our hands because Rebic has kind of been what we've been missing as well. So straight swap on that, that's okay. And I think we'll be selling Musacchio.
Yeah.
I think we'll be selling Paqueta at this stage as well. We're getting Bilia and Bonaventura's wages off the books. As well as most likely Pepe Reina's, which is actually a lot for a backup goalkeeper. And there'll be a couple of other sales in there as well. A fullback, Ricardo Rodriguez, will leave. Suso, as you said, he gives us 20 odd mil pure capital gain. Bits and bats, squad players will go.
Yeah, so that 80 million is really looking like 110, 120. You know, it's a good amount.
It'll be half, apparently, of the player sales will go into the transfer pot, which makes sense because we need to keep some money for capital gains.
Right.
So that's all good. Then the other interesting bits were Donnarumma's extension is looking good. We have talked about that before, but thinking it's going to be an agreement until about 2023, that's what most places are now saying, which is good. It pushes the long-term thing a bit further down the line when we're settled and we can see what's going on, basically. Because we're living in a strange time at the moment and everything, and that extends to football and particularly the economic side of football. But apparently it was from December that Elliot promised to Rangnick that we're going to get that renewal sorted, and it sounds to be motoring now, which is good. I think it was Sky was saying just before we started recording that there's a meeting planned in the coming days to get that sorted, so that's good. And the interesting bit was Rangnick saying apparently Rangnick wants Maldini and Ibrahimovic to both stay if it was up to him.
Makes sense. The experience, someone who knows the club. From
just helps the bridging period, you know.
Exactly. Even if it's only for a year, a transitional period.
I think it also certainly pours cold water on this idea that he's going to come in and rip everything up. He's going to bring 15 German staff with him, and he's just going to implement everything. I think it's his way of showing deference and his way of showing respect. Like, I do need some people here that know what they're talking about and know the league. And the Ibrahimovic thing is very much like the Raul thing. You know, you had Raul when he was 34 at Schalke and he helped him get to a Champions League semi. It's Ibrahimovic, man. Like,
oh, yeah. You know, that's your man.
He's a mentor. And Rangnick knows all about psychology of football players without a shadow of a doubt. And having him on the training pitch is like having an extra coach. It's that simple. So I understand that. But at the moment, apparently, Gazidis isn't keen on the idea, which I think is a money thing more than anything in Ibra's case. So,
but maybe some of that transfer budget goes to renewing Zlatan for another year, you know?
Might take a pay cut as well if Rangnick gives him a phone call and he likes what he hears.
Yes.
We don't know. So Martino Puccio asked us a question based on the four players that were listed in Vito's piece, which was Upamecano, Szoboszlai, Jovic and Odegaard. How would you rank them in terms of how much you want them?
Szoboszlai, number one. Upamecano, two. Odegaard, last. And then the other guy, third.
Jovic.
Yes.
I totally agree with you. I wouldn't be dead against any of them. That's the point to make. But the need is there for Szoboszlai, and it's just a perfect start to this whole vision that we're trying to do.
Well, and he's done the best out of the four this year as well. And it makes sense. I mean, we need him, like you said, in that position. And he's been an absolute killer. So it makes perfect sense.
Yes, we'll talk about this more next week when he's actually back before the Spal game, hopefully. But Tommy Tank says, when Ibrahimovic returns, do you think Pioli will go back to playing two up top with Ibra and Rebic or Ibra and Liao even?
I think it'll stay Rebic. I just don't think you give Liao a chance. Unless he goes off in this Roma game, I don't see why he would.
Yeah. The moment, that number 10 position seems to be the one that's so dispensable because we're playing Bonaventura there and we know he doesn't have a long-term future at the club.
Right.
So just change that to be Rebic and change Rebic's position to be Ibra and we're laughing. It still gives us a focal point. I know I said that Ibra has us playing a different way. I'm not saying it's a bad way. We look more direct and our crosses look like they have purpose. But
it just it gives us, like you said, a focal point, a target man. It draws the defender. Zlatan's never wide open, you know. So even if Rebic is, if we're still doing a 4-2-3-1, in reality, Rebic could still drift off. You know, you got to be able to move. So Zlatan pulls a defender, Rebic out wide still, same thing happens. We just also have that now extra threat from the cross. It makes sense to me.
Definitely. And the other question he asked was, forget the injury, does Chiesa deserve to be Romagnoli's partner next season?
That's a good question. Out of everyone that's there, yeah. You know, if we get Upamecano, probably not. But as of right now, yeah.
I think if we get an Upamecano or a similar profile like Kamara at Marseille, you know, a 21, 22-year-old centre-back who has the potential to be Romagnoli's long-term centre-back, who is only going to grow and get better by getting consistent playing time, I'm afraid Kea at 31 is probably going to have to move aside and be used for Cup and or Europa League games and as injury cover. I mean, we've proved that we need injury cover because Kea's out. Duarte's just coming back from a long-term injury. Musacho's out for the season. He's played his last game for us, by the way. And, we just look a bit thinner now. Don't regret not sending Gabby out on loan in January now.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be starting and we don't have a choice. So I think Chiesa will be more, 3.5 mil or whatever the buyout is. It's around that figure.
2.5.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer to keep him around. And I think he wants to stay. So that's a big deal as well. And he will keep fighting because he's been nothing but a professional. I was concerned when he arrived that he'd had such a bad initial loan spell with Atalanta. But shown himself to be nothing but professional and a proper warrior in the kind of profile we need next to Romagnoli. But Rangnick's going to have his ideas. You know, he's going to want his guy next to Romagnoli. And it makes sense. So, that's it, I think, mate.
Done deal.
Anything else? No?
That's it. We're good.
Lovely stuff. What are we on? How much have we done here?
About an hour.
Not bad. Good stuff. That's it. Fingers crossed that we're back in a week reviewing a Roma win and we were both wrong. I'll be happy to be wrong in that case. And then obviously we've got games to preview after that as well. But yeah, in the meantime, thanks very much for listening. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilpin Chronicle for some more explicit Milan-based rants. I've been joined by Anthony Torgrud.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Just realized we didn't preview Spal, which will have been played by the time we record next. But it's all good.
Really?
Yep, because it's that Wednesday when we record at a little before, a couple hours. It'll be just ending when we start.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so, well.
Real quick prediction, I think we win that. You gave your prediction anyway, so.
Yeah, I think we win that. They're second bottom. They're on 18 points. They're doing really, really badly. They can't score goals since they lost Pitania. And Ibra will be back for that, so he'll score. I think we win and keep a clean sheet. And
easy dub.
Starting 11 the same with hopefully Chiara and Romagnoli back.
Boom. Done deal.
Job done.
Tour 45. That's it.
Thank you very much for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you in a week's time.
Tira Alessio, Suso, tira. Perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli, gol! Alessio Romagnoli!